We are inundated with news stories about what some would say reflect the insensitivity of our leaders to the most vulnerable of us. The news stories come and then they go, and then they are replaced by others. But while any bit of news may no longer be on the front page of a newspaper, the top story on the nightly news, or trending on a social media feed, what happens to the real people impacted by those stories often never ceases and is sometimes repeated again and again. We see that with the ongoing gun violence in this country, most recently occurring in El Paso, Texas, yesterday morning, in a Walmart where people had gone to do their back-to-school shopping. And early this morning in Dayton, Ohio, where people were enjoying themselves in what was called by some a safe part of downtown. Our attention is pulled in so many different directions. There is something happening almost every day that wrenches at our hearts, some things more profoundly than others. Most, if not all of us, can remember the government shutdown in 2018 that lasted into early this year, when those who were responsible for our welfare engaged in a game of chicken with the lives of many of us. On paper, it ended slightly more than 6 months ago, but a recent news article in USA Today spoke not only of the risk of it happening again this year, but also of those directly impacted by the shutdown, employees who could not afford their medical expenses or mortgages, contractors who couldn't meet their financial obligations, the danger to travelers who fly in our airports, the care of our national parklands, the brain drain which resulted because quality people left federal government or chose not to seek it because of the inability to depend on federal employment. How all of those people, and even all of us, because of our reliance on the goods and services provided by federal workers and contractors, are still experiencing the after effects. One of the people interviewed for the story said it's more like the tornado that destroys the community. Yeah, the tornado's immediate damage was bad, but it takes a long time to come back. That shutdown, that gives us several glaring examples of the ways in which privilege can intersect with and potentially have an adverse impact on what some of us would call justice. The Commerce Secretary demonstrated his lack of understanding about the lives of the furloughed federal workers and contractors when he suggested that the people who were out of work could easily get a loan until they returned to work and started getting paid again. The daughter-in-law of the President of the United States referred to missed mortgage and rent payments, unpaid car notes, rationed medication, and visits to food banks as a little bit of pain for furloughed workers, and that they should stay strong for the sacrifices they are making for this country. Whether or not you agree with this position, the injustice that this scenario created was completely lost upon those who, from their standpoint and their privilege, thought the situation was reasonable. Those who did not understand the realities of a shutdown for non-privileged people. In this case, people who did not have assets to liquidate, to make up for the shortfall, and who might have been living from paycheck to paycheck because the cost of living in this country is just so high. The lack of understanding about the ways that injustice manifests itself in the lives of the average person often accompanies privilege. In the best of circumstances, it can be problematic. In the worst of circumstances, when the people who have no understanding of the way in which injustice can play out are people who are in power, it can be devastating and even life-threatening. But the inability of the privileged and powerful, a combination which can be a blessing or a curse to those who end up in their shadow, to see how the world can unfairly affect those who are less fortunate, does not necessarily have to go hand in hand with privilege. It happens when privilege is accompanied by something called advantage blindness, a phrase coined by Ben Fuchs, Megan Wrights, and John Higgins, and I don't like to quote these kinds of sources, but they were individuals who wrote an article which appeared in the Harvard Business Review last year. When privileged people don't feel privileged, when they can't see it, when they have no awareness of how their lives are different, and sometimes how the decisions they make can hurt the less powerful, that is called advantage blindness. How easy is it for those of us who think that we have made it to fail to understand why others have not? And how much of what has contributed to us making it is reliant upon whatever privilege we might have. Much of the discourse around privilege has centered on race and class. But privilege can exhibit itself in many different areas. For example, gender, sexual orientation, religion, education, gender identity, age, physical ability, and passing, which is when people are able to claim or take advantage of a privilege of a group simply because it looks like they belong. But also in the news stories about the shutdown, we heard stories about people from all over the country, all over the world really, who figured out ways to help the furloughed workers manage, to make sure they could eat at least. Those were privileged people, but they were people who could see the injustice of the situation even though they did not experience it. But that Harvard Business Review article that spoke about advantage blindness also spoke about something else. People who have it in their power to put their personal advantage, their privilege, to collective good use. Because when people have power and privilege, they are able to do more to challenge the system, because they are more likely to be heard. How many people use their position to help those who are less fortunate than them, to at least use the platforms that they have to explain why the world should be a little more just? And does what they say really make a difference? Here's a quote paraphrased for you to consider. When you have something that's good for society, but terribly harmful for given individuals. We have got to make sure those individuals are taken care of. A lot of what was determined about us was at the moment we were born, where we were born, who we were born to. The great prophet who uttered those words was Warren Buffett, one of the wealthiest people in the world. He acknowledges that most of his success is attributable to the luck of his birth. He calls it the ovarian lottery. But he has also acknowledged that he bears some responsibility to do something about the inequity in the world, because the system cannot sustain itself with such an incredible imbalance between the haves and have-nots, and he gives back. Where are the rest of us in helping to relieve the suffering of others? What is it about advantage blindness that makes it sometimes so difficult to cure? The most important gift that privilege gives to us, aside from the ability to do things that others are not able to do, is comfort. For a lot of us, in spite of the hurt and devastation that takes place in the world, we are, probably in this room, by and large, comfortable. For many of us, our day-to-day lives are not directly impacted by the many things we read and hear about. The privilege of our social and geographic location affords us that. Things happen in other places, but not here. To other people, but not us. But perhaps what we should be saying is, there, but for the luck of the draw or the grace of God, go I. But what do we do when injustice is not even within our view in the first place because of where we are located by virtue of our privilege, because of that ovarian lottery? Do we mistake the apparent insensitivity of others for callousness when it is really a reflection of ignorance? What can we do when we and others fail to comprehend? Where do Unitarian Universalists stand on the issue of privilege and justice? And how does this liberal religion, this faith, play a role in helping us to do what is right? Doing justice is a notion that runs throughout the wisdom sources from which we draw. It's not always called justice, but that's what it is. Baha'i teachings tell us, lay not on any soul a load which he would not wish to be laid upon you. In Zoroastrianism, what I hold good for self, I should for all. Hinduism, wish for others too what ye desire and long for yourself. Buddhism, make thine own self the measure of the others, and so abstain from causing hurt to them. Christianity, and as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. And for the humanists, in which the goal is a free and universal society in which people voluntarily and intelligently cooperate for the common good. There is a stereotypical view of Unitarian Universalists that many of us come from a privileged place and that this removes us from meaningful engagement with others who might be less fortunate. Well, I'm not going to engage in a discourse on that topic because to belabor that point, whether it is true or not, focuses on the discussion of who we are or who others think we are, when it should really be focused on what we can do. One of my friends used to tell me, "What the mind don't know, the heart don't grieve." And yes, in some circumstances, the truth can bring you pain, but it can also increase your understanding. When talking about the impact of journalists who are sullied so much by our leadership today on society, the American writer Finley Peter Dunne spoke of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. And what does a journalist do that might afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted? That journalist tells the truth. Dunne was speaking about the power of truth. And knowing the truth will also help us to understand what to do. Do we, the we that encompasses all of us, need access to quality education that does not teach a revisionist history, but a true one? A fair and living wage earned from one job. Better housing, healthy food, comprehensive health care, which includes mental health services. Real gun control to make our homes, our houses of worship, and the places where we work, play, and shop safer. And what is really behind? What is the truth behind us not having access to those things? What is the real story? And not just the memes and sound bites that we see and hear. We get at these truths not only by refusing to look away from what troubles us, but by craning our necks and twisting our faces to look in places that we have never looked before. It's not just reading books and newspapers, listening to podcasts, and watching the news. It is finding out about the realities of all of the people who share the space with us on this planet. And we do that by forming meaningful, deep, and sincere connections with them. We need to know the stranger. And we need to make sure that the stranger knows us. And we need to challenge the dysfunctional thinking which seeks to create and reinforce divisions between us, whether those divisions are based on race, sex, or nationality, because more and more we are seeing the resulting misplaced aggression and the hell and havoc it causes. What does justice have to do with being a people of faith? Everything. We Unitarian Universalists pride ourselves on our social justice work. It is just one way that we live out our religious values. And we can directly tie our social justice work to the way that we define ourselves in the covenant that binds our congregations together, and so us, not just within these walls, but when we are out in the world. We don't have doctrine, we don't have dogma, but we do have the seven principles. The first, second, sixth, and seventh together are particularly well suited to help us to try to articulate our own personal theology of justice, no matter what we believe individually. By acknowledging the covenant which calls upon us to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part, we are telling the world that we are here to do what is right and fair. And this is where the truth comes in. We can't do what's right and fair unless we take the time to learn enough about the world and the people in it to know what is right and fair, and then share that truth with others. This is not easy work. You heard from Stephen that part of his personal journey has been coming to terms with the way that privilege worked and still works in his life. It takes courage not only to confront injustice, but to challenge whatever privilege we have and to move out of the safety of our personal worldview and into uncomfortable places. But we also call ourselves a compassionate people. But true compassion resulting in life-affirming action does not often result in the comfort that some of us may be accustomed to. There is a song in our hymnals, "We'll Build a Land." The chorus contains an invitation to build a land where justice shall roll down like waters and peace like an ever-flowing stream. It is an adaptation of a verse in the book of Amos in the Bible, and some of you may recall it from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from the Birmingham jail. But the word peace wasn't the word that was originally used. It was righteousness. And being righteous in its most basic, non-religious sense requires good, ethic, and justifiable conduct. And although it is a long-term goal, peace does not always attend the journey there. Whether it is the journey within or the journey without, and neither does comfort. But I ask you that for those of us who call ourselves Unitarian Universalists, who wear it as a badge of pride and honor, what else could you imagine that this liberal religion calls us to do? Amen.